Hey everyone, and welcome to this, a standalone feature edition of the Risky Business Podcast. My name's Patrick Gray, and here it is, this week's feature interview with Marissa Emerson. Marissa is a security researcher who did a fantastic talk at B-Sides Canberra back in March, all about game cheating. And I'll mention now too that Marissa runs a binary exploitation bootcamp, and there are some details coming up on that after the interview. But anyway, at B-Sides, she was specifically talking about the cheating techniques PUBG gamers are using, and really just talking about how advanced they are. The crazy thing is here that the cheaters are rolling some pretty decent technique. And it reminds me of the iPhone jailbreaking scene a bit, in that it's a lot of good hackers, you know, hacking things who don't actually know necessarily that they are good hackers. Marissa Emerson joined me to talk about what she learned about PUBG cheating. And I started off by asking her to tell me how she got interested in looking at PUBG cheats. And here's what she said. And I should explain too, for those of you who don't know, PUBG, very, very popular network game. But here's Marissa Emerson telling us why she got interested in looking at cheating in PUBG. I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, so it was really accidental. I don't know if maybe some of the viewers have played PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds before, but sort of when it first came out in last year, or even came out in 2016 actually, but when it first came out, it was really, really buggy. It was a challenge to play. It was a challenge to even get working. And when I was playing it with my friends, there'd often be times where sort of the walls would disappear, or you would clip through walls, and you're essentially cheating at the game without doing anything, consciously doing anything to it. And there was one particular moment that I was playing with my friends, and something weird must have happened with the network traffic, because on their screen I was actually dead, but in the game I was still alive. And I was like, you know, I don't understand how this game actually works, because as far as I'm concerned, I can still run around and kill people, but as far as the actual server is concerned, I'm dead and I can't kill anyone. So I just started looking at the network traffic. I just opened it up in Wireshark. And when you start doing that, you sort of go down a rabbit hole pretty quickly. What ended up happening is I started finding these strings in it. And when I found strings in it, I was like, okay, so maybe the traffic is encrypted. And I actually just Googled a string. And when I Googled a string, I found a pastebin that was full of all of the actual game offsets.
Yeah, so right. So this is like you accidentally sort of Google stumbled into the cheating scene.
Yeah, I stumbled into the cheating scene. And when I started reading about it and getting more interested in it, I realized it was like genuine hacking.
It really is. Like, I mean, I know a lot of people in security who give mad respect to like game cheaters, because, you know, they're actually, it's sort of like the jailbreak community that came, you know, that evolved later, is like these people were doing mad hacks and kind of didn't realize they were doing mad hacks because they were just trying to get their thing done for their objective.
And it's strange because you read these people and they're doing these brilliant things. They understand about the kernel. They understand all these sort of malware techniques about hiding their processes. But I think they're children. A lot of them, I think, are kids, and they just want to win at this game. So I stumbled into this this community that was, it was also very, very helpful, and people were able to help each other and teach each other how to cheat. And you don't really find that in hacking stuff anymore. At least I haven't been able to find a place where you can publicly talk too much about making, you know, binary exploits. So,
well, really, I mean, cool. It depends on the binary, right? That's what that's what makes that interesting.
Yeah. Because it's not illegal, right? It's not technically illegal yet.
Yeah.
Well, at least in some countries, it's not illegal. So people can be a bit more open about it.
I think you're right. Like, it is not illegal. I mean, it might be a terms of service violation. There might be some sort of civil problem there, but, you know, unlikely to progress. And I know what you mean about first person. Well, it's not a first person shooter, but I know what you mean about these sort of shooters being buggy. I mean, there's like great games like Battlefield in some of the series, you know, people would lie down and their legs would poke through a wall and you could shoot them and murder, death, kill them. And I do remember being spawned in a first person shooter under the floor. And for some reason, I could still shoot people through the floor from underneath, but no one could shoot me. And I basically ran around for 15 minutes just killing a whole bunch of people. Now, this is the thing, right? One thing I want to get at here is like cheating. Some people listening might think, you know, what's the point of cheating? That's not going to feel good. But, you know, even speaking for myself, like accidentally spawning into this place where I was completely invincible and able to run around killing everyone, it felt really good.
Yes, it does. One thing. It's sort of like, I feel like this is a constant battle that a lot of people who are interested in this sort of exploitation stuff, is that there's sort of a question about should I or can I? And the actual technical challenge that comes with cheating in a video game is really fascinating. You end up like, I wasn't really, my background is a lot more Unix based, but I learned a lot about Windows getting into this stuff. Yeah. So there's a whole stuff that you can learn that's really exciting.
Well, see, at least the people who cheat get the satisfaction of knowing they did something clever. For me, I just accidentally spawn somewhere. But anyway, let's
yeah, exactly. But then, like, part of it is, like, if you could figure out what caused that glitch to happen and do it regularly, then that's like writing a cheat, right? If you could figure out what actually happened that made you fall through the ground.
Yep, yep. Well, let's talk through some of the techniques that people use to cheat in PUBG, because, you know, you just presented on this at B-Sides Canberra. It was a very popular talk, a few weeks back. And, you know, some of the cheats, they range from being very, very simple to being very, very complicated. One of my favorite simple ones is, like, if you delete a bunch of the game files at, like, the right time when you've just jumped out of a plane, it causes a whole bunch of the walls to disappear, like 30% of the time, but your system's going to crash after 10 minutes. And tell us about that.
Yeah, that's really funny. So what was kind of great about starting to get into this about, like, in August 2017 was that they were figuring out how to make the game work better, and they were also trying to figure out cheating at the same time. So they were trying to just get the game to run on a decent computer, and then they also had cheaters ruining it. But back then, all the cheats are actually quite simple. So this one I thought was really, really funny is some guy said that, you know, if you just delete a bunch of random asset files as you're falling from the plane, then about 30% of the time the actual walls won't load and you can just shoot through walls. And you have about 10 minutes until the game crashes. But during that time, you can actually get a lot of kills and have a bit of fun with it. So what I found really funny about that, it was just hackers trying weird things. And one of the weird things you can try is, what if I just delete some files while the game's loading?
Now, that's probably at the simplest end of how this goes. And, you know, it does kind of take me back to the early days, like with Doom, when people started messing around with config files. And, you know, I may have, like, done a little bit of that myself. Didn't work so well on the network side, but you could do all sorts of weird stuff and patch it. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of the older listeners will remember, Simpsons Doom. That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
but, you know, what are some of the sort of more advanced techniques? Because it does get pretty sophisticated pretty quickly.
Yeah, it does. So what was kind of interesting about the way that it sort of progresses with PUBG is that you could see in real time, as basically what the cheaters would do is they would try something and then the anti-cheat would realize that they're doing that and respond to it. So you have something really basic, basically if you want to make a program that can read and write memory of another program, you do something like you open process and you get a handle, and then with that handle in Windows, you can read and write process memory. So something really basic that might be, you just open up something and you start reading, and you know the offsets about where certain enemy positions are, and you read that and then you write some sort of program that can display that. So what anti-cheat then did in response to that is they would, like, register callbacks for certain functions. So you might register a callback for any handle creation, and then they'll be like, okay, I don't know what this handle is. I don't know about this handle, so I'm going to ban this person because they've opened a strange handle. So then what happens is you forbid any sort of open process calls on the game. But the way that anti-cheat can get around that, the way that cheaters can actually get around that is that instead of, like, opening your own handle, a lot of processes in Windows system processes have to have a handle on the game. They have to have a handle on anything. And that's really similar to, like, malware, right? Like, they can hide in processes that you can't just turn off. So what you do is you actually hack an existing process that already has an authorized handle, and then your cheat program becomes a separate process that can communicate with that process that already has.
Yeah, and then the anti-cheat process can't, like, boot you for that because it's just a normal Windows process, right?
Handle. Yeah, exactly. It has to have that handle. It's just really sneaky. It's they and I think it's like malware. I don't know too much about malware antivirus, but from what I can see is it's very reactive. Like, antivirus reacts to what malware does. And it's the same with cheating, right? Like, they wait for the next move and then they respond to it. But sort of, it's always the cheaters that have a little bit of a step ahead.
Mm. Now, you know, from what you told me, PUBG, when it first launched, was pretty scrappy. And, you know, did they even have, like, basic anti-cheating in the early versions?
I think at the very, very start, they didn't. And what they've done is they use anti-cheat called BattleEye, but it's sort of like they bought BattleEye and they sort of inserted it into the game.
So they sort of shoehorned it in there.
yeah. So instead of I think Valve, like, they create their own anti-VAC cheats, and it's, like, it's very close to the game creators are creating the game, the anti-cheat stuff as well. And I think BattleEye does work really closely with PUBG, but it was sort of, like, inserted in there. So they had a lot of, like, they had to catch up pretty quickly. And it just became something about PUBG, I think it just became instantly attractive to hackers. The biggest problem, I think, is it's like 99% of hackers come from China. And it's not generally people writing their own cheats, right? It's generally people buying off-the-shelf cheats. but yeah, they've had a bit of trouble.
Well, we did see a whole bunch of people just arrested in China the other week for, but I think the charges were more related to the fact that they were putting malware into their cheats, right? Yeah. Rather than actually the cheating itself. So, I mean, you know, you've got other sort of malware style, you know, memory tricks that you can use to do this. Like, why don't you walk us through some of them? Because, and then we're going to get to the network side, because that's also interesting when you're dealing with something that's, you know, very much trying to be real time. Of course, there's a lot of UDP and that makes encryption basically impossible. And, you know, there's all sorts of horror show stuff you can do on the network side. But tell us more about what you can do in memory when it comes to game cheating.
Yeah, okay. So there's some really cool ones. And there's stuff that is really like genuine hacking, I think, involving shellcode and stuff. So another technique is, a lot of people probably know about DLL injection, where you actually just inject your game cheat into the memory of, say, a system process. So what they'll actually do is they'll start monitoring things for DLL injection. They'll monitor calls to load library. So instead of actually injecting a library, you inject shellcode. And then if they start scanning for shellcode, what you can do to actually make it really hard to scan is, instead of just having the shellcode in one big block in an existing page of memory, you can just make it jump to different pages. That makes it really hard to scan. So you're actually splitting up your shellcode, which is another malware technique, right, of being difficult to determine. And they'll do things like, okay, so if you want to inject shellcode, maybe you need to allocate a new page of executable memory to put your shellcode in. So they monitor for that, like, are there any executable pages of memory that we don't know about? So what you can do instead is you look for executable pages of memory that exist already. So normally when you know, you allocate a block of memory, there'll be a lot left over. You don't actually need all of it. And so you just sort of slot it in existing pages. And that makes it, you can no longer monitor the creation of executable pages because they're just using existing ones. Another example is like to when you allocate a new page of memory and you try and get your shellcode to run, you create a new thread to get the execution on that thread. So they're like, okay, what if we monitor thread creation? So what cheaters then do is, instead of actually monitoring, instead of creating a new thread, they'll just hijack execution of an existing thread that has to run. And to find out what thread you can use, you just go through your LSAS, which is the system process that everyone seems to use, and you just suspend threads until your computer doesn't crash. And then you can find one that you can kind of hijack execution of, and you can't really notice that, and they don't really notice that.
We should probably at this point explain, you know, I mean, obviously we're talking about, you know, trying to seize control over the game, but we should probably explain at this point what people are actually trying to do from the game standpoint. Like, are they trying to make walls disappear? Are they trying to make, you know, some cheats I've seen in the past, you know, they make people visible, even if they're like on the other side of a building, you can kind of see them. They're red, or put red dots on the enemy. Or so what is it that people are actually trying to do with the cheats?
So it's really, you can be as creative as you want. Basically, if you can read and write memory, you can, the world is your limit. So a lot of things that what people will do, and probably what the most annoying one is at the moment, is that if you can read memory and know that an enemy exists, and you know, you go through the list of enemies and you find their position and you know where the memory is for your bullet location, you can actually just set it to become someone's head. So you like intercept that and change it. Another thing might be like, you just know the location of people. So you might have, some people actually, you can sort of do, there's like external
just turning, just like auto sending the bullet via memory. Like you don't get the satisfaction of pulling the trigger, you know?
No. Yeah. So you can figure out where people are. You can make it so that you run really fast. It's sort of basically one of the big issues with PUBG is that so much of it is client side. So the client will tell the server that I shot this person in the head, and the server will be like, okay. I think it's just because, you know, you have 100 players and it's quite difficult to process all that information and also do sort of any sort of anti-cheat where you say, is it logical that this person could have shot this person through a wall?
Yeah. So no, it's interesting what you say, right? Because before, when you were talking about how, you know, it's like AV in that it's reactive, you know, it just seems like this thing wasn't built with integrity in mind, right? Which is why, you know, it's sort of like Windows XP, is why you got to layer on all this cumbersome crap on top to, you know, stop this sort of stuff from happening.
And I don't want to make fun of PUBG in any way, because I don't think
PUBG for people who don't necessarily know about it. I mean, it was kind of an accidental smash hit, right? Yeah,
exactly. This guy made this game and ended up being really fun. And sort of despite people are complaining, if you actually look at like the Steam reviews, you'll have people like giving it a negative review, but they have 200 hours played.
Yeah.
So people love the game despite.
But they also love bitching.
Yeah, they do.
Now, you know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, people are even doing like kernel related hacks on this, like, you know, to get this done. Like, what does this look like in the PUBG cheating scene?
Yeah. So the interesting thing is like what the anti-cheat has to do is they have to, their enemy is essentially someone who has complete root control over their system. And once you can actually get into the kernel, remember the goal is to be able to read and write process memory that you're not supposed to have access to. And if you're in the kernel, you can read and write whatever process memory you want. So what people will do is they'll actually get into the kernel and make like a little, so the cheat process will do requests to a kernel driver to read and write the process memory. And that way it doesn't actually ever need a handle on the game. So you can sort of bypass all of these extra detection mechanisms that anti-cheat has. And what I thought was really amazing about that is, okay, if you want to write a driver for Windows, you have to kind of sign your own driver, or you can hack an existing driver. So what people do is like they have, oh, here's a list of existing drivers that already have vulnerabilities in it that you can hack. So there's like a CPU-Z driver, there's like an ASUS UEFI update driver that you can hack. And then once you actually have already, you can just download exploits for them. And once you have code execution, you can put your cheat game in there. And then there's also crazy things like people use direct kernel object manipulation, which is like you research it a bit more and it's actually a technique rootkits use to hide the cheat process. So when I say they're doing like they're actually legitimate hackers, I really feel that they are legitimate hackers. So direct kernel object manipulation is basically you get in the kernel and you find this linked list of processes and you just remove the process you want to hide from the linked list. And because Windows does scheduling with threads, like stuff can still run. It's okay to just remove it. So any sort of anti-cheat mechanism that's actually just looking through a process list will no longer see your cheat and it'll disappear.
Nice. And, yeah. You know, and what are they doing on the, you know, I mean, how do they stop that becomes the question, right?
They have to basically, yeah, they have to see.
They have to start putting logic on the server side, don't they, to see, yeah. Well, you know, yeah. Bullets shouldn't be able to go through walls.
Yeah, yeah. It really depends on the technique that the kernel drivers are using.
I'm going to ask at this point too, like, is this a problem? Does this sort of problem apply to some of the other shooters? Like, you know, I'm thinking like COD, Battlefield, things like that. Did they face the same sort of problems, or are they really doing more on the server side than PUBG?
So they do face the sort of problems. And what is interesting is like Counter-Strike Go, they have this concept of Overwatch where you crowdsource. Someone will say this is suspicious and they'll report it and it'll crowdsource people watching the game to see if it is suspicious. So even though you have these game companies that are really technically sound and they can do all these techniques, they still have cheating problems. And basically the best way to solve it is actually getting people to look and say, is this suspicious? Yeah. And PUBG didn't have that spectator mode for a really long time. That's only a new thing. And that's what's getting people now. So you have some game modifications that still were working when I gave this talk. These game modifications where you're actually just changing sort of asset files and you're making people look red or blue, or you're reducing recoil. And those aren't caught unless you reduce recoil, because when you reduce recoil, it's obvious on the spectator mode.
Yeah. It's funny. I've been in, I remember dropping in on someone as a spectator because I, you know, I play on a console, right? And I'm thinking, yeah. this guy was just running around like in a helicopter being freaky. And I thought, yeah. There is no way that this person isn't cheating. And that means like, wow, you know, this could be an amazing story because it's on a console and it would mean the amount of work. And then, you know, I went into spectator mode and just watched this person and no, they were just a freak.
Oh, that was just really good. Yeah.
They were just really,
I hate it when that happens, right? Yeah. Like you're like, oh, that guy's definitely cheating. And it's sort of, it's implanted in your mind now when there's so many cheaters. But normally when I spectated is they're just way better than me. So
of course we should point out too, that you can't really do this stuff on consoles.
No, it is. It's a lot more difficult, right? You have to actually hack the console first.
Yeah, you have to get through like about 10 layers of, you know, crypto bull before you can even, you know, before you can start fiddling with the kernel at least. Now, look, there is the network side as well. And the network side, you know, this isn't like the normal web. This isn't like doing a transaction page for an e-commerce website. You're talking about, you know, data where latency is a really important thing, which means that, you know, it's going to be UDP. Encrypting that is always, you know, you can kind of do it, but it's always going to be bodgy. So what do these games look like from the network side?
So when I started the project, I was like, oh, it's going to be really easy, right? It's going to be every single packet's going to be the same length and I'm going to figure out what they do. And I'm just going to, it should be just easy to look at it and find strings and figure out how it works just by looking at it. But that was so wrong. So it is actually quite complicated to figure out what's going on. Basically,
is it some sort of horrible custom binary protocol?
It's actually open source because they're using Unreal Engine. So that's the benefit that you have as a cheater, is that you know that they're using the Unreal Engine, and the Unreal Engine netcode is open source. So once you can sort of start parsing the Unreal Engine netcode, all you need is like the game-specific offsets and the game-specific object sizes to figure out what's actually going on. When I first started, what I actually did was there was one single packet that was always the same size. Every other packet, you never have a consistent size. So I was kind of hoping there would be some sort of consistency, so you would know that, you know, like the third byte is always going to be someone's location. But there is one outgoing packet that's always the consistent size, and it's actually your own location. And I think it's actually sent over voice. So it's actually the voice packet, and they need to know where you are in the voice packet because it's all directional, the voice. So what I actually did is I just jumped up and down and I ran around and I went to the corners and I did weird things and I tried to see what bytes were changing. And I actually was able to figure out that the X, Y, and Z coordinates were in those single UDP packets. So that was like one simple win at the very start, was I could find my own location, but that's not very useful.
No, I mean, I was just thinking, I mean, great, you know where you are, right? Like, what does that get you?
But yeah, the Unreal Engine netcode is actually open source. And so you can read it. And it's a bit complicated because, like you said, it's UDP, but there are some parts that actually have to be reliable. So they kind of built this TCP-like functionality over UDP.
But Sounds great.
Yeah. But if I was a bit, like, I don't really know C# very well. I'm a bit of a C programmer, right? I know a bit of C and Python. So I was like, oh, it'll be simple. I'll just rewrite it. And that was probably a bad idea. It probably would have been quicker to just actually get the Unreal Engine netcode and modify it so that it was like the PUBG netcode.
Yeah.
But I started from scratch, so I learned about dealing with bit streams. So yeah, there's no standard format. You can't assume that someone's location is a particular offset, and sort of packets will be, there'll be different packets for the same message broken up, and you have to connect them all together, and it might have to be in a certain order. So you have to store all those packets, and it you have to maintain it all the time. So there's a period, and I haven't done this for a while. I haven't really looked at this since, I guess, February or March, and there's been heaps of updates since then. But every time there was an update, it would change. So it's actually like, it's a lot of maintenance work to maintain a cheat if you want to keep it working.
But what did you wind up getting after you'd rewritten this? I mean, were you able to find other people's locations and things like that?
You know, I'm a bit nervous admitting this on a podcast. but you know, you can, it's not too hard to find enemy locations.
Oh, I love that. That's the most shady, slightly evasive answer. Fantastic.
But also, It's all object-oriented stuff, right? So if you can find enemy locations, you can actually find objects and you can find vehicles and you can find a lot of information once you have that that framework set up.
And I think one thing that was interesting too is that you said you can do this, you know, you can just actually run this stuff on a separate device so you can have a second screen showing you information about the game. And that's a great way to not be detected.
So what was really interesting is the way that most people do it, the way that most people release these packet sniffing versions, is they try and make it like a product, because as I said before, most people aren't building their own hacks, they're buying them. So the idea is that you don't have these super technically savvy people, they just want to use a hack. So they'll release it as like a virtual machine image, and the virtual machine image will do ARP spoofing or something like that to actually get it to go through the game. But if you actually know a bit of network knowledge yourself, you can set it up so, you know, the packets go to two different computers. And as long as your packet sniffer is on a completely different machine, there's no way they can actually find out that it's there.
One thing that I've seen popping up in the news here and there, I mean, it's not stuff that typically makes it into the weekly podcast because we're more sort of focused on, you know, different stuff, the cybers. Yes. The cybers, less about the gaming world. But like some of these game developers are dropping like straight up rootkits with the game so that they get visibility into the, you know, into their users so that they can better spot this sort of stuff. I mean, is that kind of where anti-cheat is going, that you're going to have to sign T&Cs that say, look, we're basically getting system shells on your box if you want to play on network?
Yeah, so you have to think about like how much permissions anti-cheat actually needs to have to be able to like look through all your process memory to see what's actually opening and what's going on. I think it's kind of gonna, I feel like it's gonna get worse because as cheats get more complicated, so anti-cheat has to get a bit more complicated. And it's a bit of like, when you read these forums, there's a bit of paranoia. Some people think like, oh, you know, I know for a fact that BattleEye will look through your DNS cache, because one of the ways they detect for actual...
See if you're, what, communicating with, what, the servers where you download the cheats or like... That's amazing.
The irony of it is that the ones that you buy, they don't want you to they don't want you to crack it and not have to pay for it. So they have their own licensing mechanisms, and part of their licensing mechanism is like verification over a specific server.
Oh, okay. So it's like a regular beaconing, right? So they just look at your DNS cache and see if your cheat is verifying its license.
Yeah. So you already know that they have permission to look through your DNS cache. Some people think, and I don't know if this is true, right? The anti-cheat itself is actually quite hard to reverse engineer, as it should be.
Yeah.
But some people are like, oh, you know, it looks through all your most recently modified files. That's not verified, but, you know, you can see the paranoia is starting to build.
But that's what I mean. And it seems sort of justifiable because, you know, some of these anti-cheat things are getting really quite crazy.
Yeah, and cheaters do ruin a game. Like,
they do.
I think it's technically interesting, but as far as actually, and sort of the conclusion I made in my talk was, so if I build this radar, I never kind of went to the extent where you do crazy things like you make sure that the bullets always hit someone's head. I don't really see the point in doing that. But I still like was really bad at the game because I'm not very good at aiming. So even knowing that someone was there didn't help me that much.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, you know, you can imagine those like 14-year-olds who do nothing else. It's going to be pretty helpful to them. I mean, I'm guessing a solution to this. I mean, it's just really going back to brass tacks and going, well, you need to be using a system that's, you know, that its integrity is not necessarily guaranteed, but it's a much more high integrity system. So I'm thinking like a PS4 with a mouse controller is probably going to be your best bet at avoiding cheaters.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
All right, Marissa Emerson, thank you very much for joining us to talk about the, you know, the wonderful world of PUBG cheating. It's fascinating stuff. And I think, you know, there really are lessons for people in security who aren't necessarily, you know, gamers. It's an interesting scene to have a look at. There's a lot of cool technique going on there. So, yeah, thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
That was Marissa Emerson there. And yes, she is running a binary exploitation bootcamp in Brisbane that will have another session next semester. And yeah, she's hoping to make it a yearly thing. The bootcamp is called Dead Beef Society. It's free for anyone who's interested in learning some old school hacking from the ground up. And I've linked through to the site that is all about that in the show note for this podcast. That course goes from like basic stack overflows all the way up to network attacks with all OS protections enabled. So you get to sort of see, you know, first principles right up to contemporary stuff. But that is it for this special feature edition. I'll be back next week with more risky business for you. But until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.